Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will see the second line from the top of Daf Zayin. We continue with the process of the Sota woman, the woman suspected of immoral behavior, and she is brought to the Beis HaMikdash, the place where the high court, where the Sanhedrin used to sit in session. Ketzad oise lo. What does he do, the husband do? Malicha lebeisdin sheba oise mokom. He brings her to the court in his own locale. Umoisrim lo shnei tamidei chachomim. And he is presented with two Torah scholars that will accompany him on his journey to the high court in Jerusalem. This point, of course, you will see in the next Mishnah on the lower part of the page. Now, what's the purpose of having the two Talmidei Chachamim? Shema Yavo Aleha Baderech. Because otherwise, we are afraid that the husband, who is currently prohibited to have intimacy with his wife, on their trip, if he is alone with her, he might violate the law and have that intimacy. So they will serve, we'll say, as chaperones. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ba'ala Ne'emon Oleha. Rabbi Yehuda says you can rely on her husband. We will see later in the Gemara the rationale behind this, if you are looking for rationale, because we might find a scriptural reference as well for Rabbi Yehuda's position, but the rationale behind it is that a husband is trusted to be with his wife when she is in a state of nida, impurity, which is actually a very serious time, whereby if a husband has relations with his, even though it's his own wife, while she's a nida, that's punishable by kores. Here you have a suspected offense, namely having relations with his wife while on the way to Yerushalayim during the Sota period. That actually is a lesser offense, and therefore certainly we should be able to rely on the husband in that context. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a little note that you might see with a star to the side of your marked Gemara page, and we indicate Heora. Lekamon ba-Gemara yushnei nisyonos. Later in the Gemara, there will be attempts l'dayek, to infer from the Mishnah siyua l'shnei halochas shel Rav, to support two halochas that Rav promulgated. She yofiu ba-Gemara. These two halachas will appear in the Gemara. Diuk rishon mehamila shnei. The first attempt at supporting Rav will be from the word in the Mishnah, shnei, two, talmidei chachamim, but emphasis on the word two. The diuk sheni mehabitui talmidei chachamim. The second inference will be, or the second attempt to infer a support to Rav will be from the expression Talmidei Chachomim. Now, we turn to the Gemara, and we have a topic heading that says essentially the same thing that we just read in our note. The topic heading under the word Nosei says, HaGemara Mevareres Im Nitan Lohavi Siyua Mimishnosenu. The Gemara will explore whether we can bring a support from our Mishnah, L'shnei halochas shel Rav b'inyan yichud, to regarding two halachas of Rav concerning the topic or the prohibition of yichud, where the halacha prohibits a man being alone with another woman. Now the Gemara. Now, as your eye scans the Gemara itself, you'll notice markings. So under the Mivneh heading that you see in the margin of our Gemara, marked Gemara page, you'll notice a diamond is featured. These are diamonds highlighting Milas HaMishnah, the words from the Mishnah, Shemimeno Midaikim, from which we will infer attempt to infer a support to Rav. The triangles that you'll see are as follows. The tip of the triangle facing upwards, Lemo Misayeya L'Rav. These are attempts to bring support to Rav's halacha. And the inverted triangle, Dechia. That is a rejection of Rav. You'll notice in the Gemara text, if you look closely, you'll see the name Rav is underlined. So structurally, we have two halachas of Rav, and we're going to try to bring support to each one of them from the aforementioned words in the Mishnah, the word Trey and the word or Shnei and the word Talmidei Chachamim. And each time the Gemara, though, will reject the support and explain why the Mishnah says what it does, but without serving as support to Rav. The Gemara. Trey v'ihu. On the trip to Yerushalayim, the woman is accompanied by the husband, and two, emphasis on the word two Talmidei Chachamim. Ha Tlosa, 1 plus 2, husband plus 2 Talmidei Chachamim, is Tlosa's 3. So we ask, Lema Misele, we have a long question marking, Lema Misele L'Rav, shall we say that this Mishnah supports a law ruling of Rav? The Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Lo Shonu Elo Beir. The Mishnah teaches elsewhere that a woman can be alone with two men. So Rav qualifies that particular Mishnah, which is found in Maseches Kiddushin. That is qualified by Rav as saying that's true in a settled area, in a city. Avol baderech, but out in the wilds, on the road. Ad di'ika shlosha. A woman shall not be left alone with men, unless there are three. Why? What's the problem with two? Shemo yitztorech echod mehen linikovov. One of them, if there were only two, would possibly need to relieve himself and go off to the side somewhere in private. V'nimso echod mehen misyachid imo erva. And then that'll leave the other man alone with a woman that's not his wife. With a erva is a forbidden woman. That's Rav's halacha in general. It's not a halacha that's focused on the case of Sota per se, but it's a general point that if a woman is out on the road, not in a settled area, the problem of her being alone with another man, alone, meaning literally alone with another man, which of course is quite fertile grounds for intimacy, we want to avoid that. And how do you avoid that? By insisting on a minimum of three men that would be with a woman on the road, on the trip. You can imagine people, even as this recording is being made, people travel in cars and might pick up hitchhikers, travelers, and if one is contemplating picking up a woman traveler on a dark road at night, think about this halacha, that if he is in the car, even if he has a friend in the car, to pick up a woman passenger might very well be a problem. If there are three people in the car, then we could see more grounds for permitting picking up a woman traveler. That's an analogy. It's just to make this this Gemara, we'll say, to present it in practical, contemporary terms. The Gemara responds and says, lo. We can't say that the citation of two in this Mishnah is necessarily a support to Rav. What we tried to say was that two plus the husband, total of three, that's the number you need for a woman going on the road with other men. That's not what this Mishnah is telling us. In other words, we're not denying Rav's halacha. We're not saying that he's wrong or has no basis, but to say that this Mishnah is a support for it, that we cannot say. Ha-cha hainu taimo. Here, the reason for the two, Tamidei Chachomim, but emphasis on the two, the reason we have two people is ki heshi delehevu olei sahadi. Two men besides the husband, the two represents witnesses. Rashi says, "Delevo alei sadi im yovo leo yoidu olov beveizd in agado velo yashkua." They are there to serve as witnesses in the case that the husband does have intimate relations with his wife, with the sota wife. Hence, this is a halacha that's specifically sota oriented, and they will serve as witnesses in the high court, in the temple courtyard, thereby preventing the sota process from continuing. As we've learned in the past, that if the husband violates the halacha and has intimacy with his wife after she has become prohibited to him as a result of the sota process getting started, the intimacy that he would have stops the whole process from continuing. And they would serve as two witnesses, the minimum number of witnesses that's required to establish facts two. And that's why we want to have these two Tamidei Chachamim there. The Gemara continues. Again, we focus on a term in the Mishnah, Tamidei Chachamim, in the reference to the people accompanying them on the road is specifically Torah scholars. In, yes, that is, they are the ones who are qualified to go along with the husband and the woman and the wife. Kule amalo, but commoners know. Well, what's the significance of specifically Tamidei Chachamim? Leimo meselei liidoch derav. Shall we say that our Mishnah then supports another teaching of Rav? Yom Rav Yudam Rav. Loi shanu elok sherin. The concept of a woman being allowed to be with two men, say in a city, in a settled area, a woman is allowed to be with two men, and that's not a violation of the rules of yichud, of being alone. That's if the two men are kosher, are proper, pious individuals. Avol prutzin, if the men that are with the woman are luid, are too free with themselves, afilu asora nami lo. Even if there are 10 men with the woman, that would be unacceptable. Maisahoya, there in fact was an incident with a group of prutzim, a group of men like this. Votsiua asora b'miton. There were 10 men that literally that carried a woman. Rashi makes reference to a married woman. They carried her out on some kind of bed. Rashi explains on a stretcher as if she were dead, and did what they did what loose, uncontrolled men would do. So even though there was a 10 of them there, that didn't serve to create an environment, create an atmosphere of embarrassment, being that they were in fact lewd and in Hebrew prutzim. So you can see then that from our Mishnah, one could consider that the whole heter for a woman to be with two men is only if the two men are pious. As the Mishnah indicates, they have to be Talmidei Chachamim. The Gemara says, lo, the Mishnah does not serve as a support to Rav's halacha. And as we said before, we're not denying the veracity, the authenticity of Rav's halacha. But to suggest that our Mishnah is the support for it, that no. Hacha hainu taimo, the reason that our Mishnah mentions Talmidei Chachamim, diyadi lasruyei bei. They know law, they are Talmidei Chachamim, they know, lasruyei means they know how to warn him, warn the husband, telling him that the whole sota process will not work if you have relations with her. We look at Rashi together. The Yadi Lasruye Bey Veloma Lo and tell him in a Torah, based on the Torah, Kishenu Ish Menuka Meyovon, when the man is not clean from sin, meaning he has sinned. And what do we mean he has sinned? Shevo Leo, Mi Shinesro Alov, that he had intimacy with her after the point she becomes forbidden to him, Aina Mayan Bodkin Es Ishta, the water will be rendered ineffective. So that's why you need to have Talmidei Chachamim here. They are knowledgeable of this, and they will put him on notice if they see him attempting to have intimacy with his wife while en route. The topic heading that accompanies the next piece of Gemara, we glance at the side, we have a nosei. Mi mevi es hasoita Yerushalayim. Who is the one that brings the sota to Jerusalem? The ne'emonus habal shelo bo aleo baderech. And can we rely on the husband that he doesn't have intimacy, that he stays away from her while going on the trip to Yerushalayim? The Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, by law ne'emon aleo. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah disagreed with the Tanakhama and says the husband can take his wife alone to Yerushalayim. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bailo Ne'emon, Mi Kal V'Chomer. We can rely on the husband based on Kal V'Chomer logic. Uma Nidashi, Bekores, Bailo Ne'emon Aleha. Nida, a woman during her female cycle, her menstruation period, husband and wife are living together. No one is necessarily with them. And we rely on him without chaperones, without witnesses. People live many years together as husband and wife, alone in the privacy of their bedroom, and there's no one there, and he's trusted not to have intimacy with her during her forbidden period. Sota shehi belav lo kol shekein. The sota case where the woman, the wife, has become also to him because he had warned her and there were witnesses that she went into privacy, went to seclusion with another man, starting the sota process whereby she becomes forbidden to her husband. And let us say the husband would violate the halacha and have relations with her. What level violation would that be? That would be a lav, a negative command. A negative command, it's of course bad to violate negative commands, but it doesn't carry with it the kores punishment. And as such, it's a lighter level offense. So that if we trust a husband to be alone with his wife when the offense would carry with it a kores punishment, certainly we can trust a man to be alone with his wife when she is a sota, which at worst is a simple negative command. Well, that sounds like a very strong argument. V'Rabbanan, what's the Rabbanan's response? He hanosenes. He says that very argument that you are making, nosenes means gives us the basis for what we are saying. Nida de kores chamir alei mehemon. The nida sin, which carries with it the kores punishment, is very severe, and therefore that serves as a deterrent. Therefore, we can trust him to be alone with her. Sota delav, sota, which is a mere violation of a negative command, lo chamirole, is not so serious in his eyes, velo mehemon, and therefore he's not trusted to be alone with her. Up till this point, we have seen Reb Yehuda's point of view, which was based on Kal V'Chomer logic, to conclude that the husband is allowed to be alone with his wife. On the side of the Gemara, we have a subtopic heading, which reads as follows: Ne'emonus habal afi Reb Yehuda, the trustworthiness of the husband with regard to the opinion of Reb Yehuda, Haim ze mevusas al kal v'chomer? Is it based on kal v'chomer like we saw oi al posuk? Or possibly it's based on a scriptural reference. You'll notice as we scan ahead in the Gemara, there's a double underline highlighting the word vehevi. And under the Mivneh heading, we note Havlota Litzurach Kushya Behemshech HaGemara. The highlighting of this word is necessary for a question raised later in the Gemara, so we don't have to place too much emphasis on it now. Not only that, but we also have a bracketed section. On the side where you see the starred note, we have written the following. Sograyim L'shem Diluk. The Sograyim, this bracketed section is marked off by the brackets in order to skip it initially. Kedei lagia yeshirot, to get straight away, l'shitat Rebbe Yehuda. To get to see Rebbe Yehuda immediately. And ubekach liros miyad akushya. And by doing this, you'll be able to see the question in an immediate fashion. The question being, on the one hand, you say that Rebbe Yehuda came to his conclusion through kal v'chomer logic, but do we not see that Rebbe Yehuda bases his ruling trust the husband based on a pasuk, not kal v'chomer logic? B'soicham, within the brackets, muvo shitas achachomim, the opinion of the chachomim will be presented, shemidrabonon ein lismoch al habal, on a rabbinic level we should not trust the husband, Rabbi Yossi shecholeik aleihem diesh lismoch al habal mikoach kal v'chomer, and Rabbi Yossi will appear arguing with the rabbonon that you should be able to rely on the husband through kal v'chomer logic, and that kal v'chomer logic will probably be familiar to us when we get to it. So now that we've laid out the groundwork for the Gemara, let's take a look in the text. Notice we have a long question marking. The Gemara asks, Rabbi Yehuda mikal v'chomer maisi law? Does Rabbi Yehuda derive the trustworthiness of a husband to be alone with the sota wife? Is that derived through kal v'chomer logic? V'ha Rabbi Yehuda mikroi maisi law? Maisi literally means brings it, he derives it. Rabbi Yehuda derives his halacha, trust the husband, mikroi, from psukim. Desanya, and now we skip initially. Rabbi Yehuda omer, min ha-Torah ha-ish mevi es ishto el ha-kohen. Based on the Torah, not kal v'chomer. Notice we've dashed underlined the expression min ha-Torah. Compare this with the dashed underlining before, at the beginning of the question, where it said mikal v'chomer maisi law. Here you see Rabbi Yehuda deriving it from a scriptural basis. Min ha-Torah ha-ish mevi es ishto kohen shenemar v'hevi ha-ish es ishto. The husband brings his wife. So, why did we see Rabbi Yehuda presented as basing himself on kal v'chomer logic when at the end of the day it's a pasuk? The Gemara answers, Omar lehu kal v'chomer bereisha. Initially, when Rabbi Yehuda met the sages, his contemporary rabbis, he said to them the point, a husband can be alone with the sota wife, based on a kal v'chomer. He said that at first, uparchua. And they undid the kal v'chomer. They showed that the logic is not rock solid. We'll see how they do that. The hodar omar lehu kra. And after they undid the kal v'chomer logic, he says, okay, whatever you say, but there's a pasuk that is the basis of my teaching. You might ask, well, if Rabbi Yehuda is based on a pasuk, how can someone disagree? So we'll see. We'll touch on that point later. Now that you see you saw the question and the answer, let's go over the bracketed section. Starting with the question again, Rabbi Yehuda, mikal v'chomer maisi law. Does Rabbi Yehuda really derive his point of trusting the husband alone with the wife from kal v'chomer v'ha Rabbi Yehuda mikroi maisi law? Rabbi Yehuda is based on a pasuk, desanya v'hevi ha'ish es ishto al ha'kohen. This is the Tana Kama's approach to the pasuk. The pasuk says the husband brings his wife to the kohen, which is a reference to bringing her to the Beis Hamikdash, where the sota process continues. This pasuk informs us that min haTorah haIsh meviyas ishto, that from the Torah's standpoint, from the Torah's perspective, it is sufficient that a husband alone with his wife, is acceptable in their journey to Yerushalayim. Avol omru hachomim. The squiggle underline here and the star to the side of the Gemara will be necessary later on. Avol omru hachomim moisim lo shnei talmidei chachomim. The rabbis moved in and superimposed a ruling on the Torah and said that we don't want the husband to be alone. We want there to be also two talmidei chachomim. Shemo yavo aleh abaderach, because otherwise we're fearful the husband might have intimacy with her. But in the presence of two talmidei chachomim, so that will serve as a deterrent. Rabbi Yosi Yomer, Bailo ne'emon olel mikal v'chomer. A husband can be alone with his wife through kal v'chomer logic. You don't need to have the two talmidei chachomim accompanying them. Uma nido shiba kores, Bailo ne'emon oleho. A nida wife is allowed to be alone with her husband. We trust him, even though it carries with it a severe penalty. In other words, nida represents a more severe type offense, and yet he is trusted. Sota shibalavlo kol shekein, the sota, which is a lower level offense, certainly we should be able to rely on him. Omru lo lo. The chachomim argued against Rabbi Yosi and said, not so. Im amris benida, if you're trusting him with his wife, the nida shekein yesh lo heter, she becomes permitted. The nida is the monthly cycle that women experience. So during the blood flow and the ensuing clean days that follow, so she is, of course, prohibited. But after that, she's allowed. People often view this as for 2 weeks of the month, so she is prohibited, and the other 2 weeks she is permitted, and that's a cycle that continues through their married life. When we make references to things like this, halacha-type points, do not draw practical halacha conclusions from any of our Gemara markings, daf yomi shiurim. We're suggesting things in general terms without referencing applied halacha. So we want to say cover ourselves that no one makes mistakes and quotes what we say here for practical applied halacha. But as a general way of looking at the nida, she will say temporarily off limits while she's experiencing the female cycle plus the subsequent clean days that are necessary to observe. But after that, she's permitted. So that with the nida, so true, it's a very severe offense if he violates it, but it has an end in sight. However, toimar basoita she'ein law heter, the husband with this sota wife en route to Jerusalem, if she is found to be tamea, in other words, if she's found to have been guilty, so she'll never be permitted to him again. It's there's no end in sight to this, to the status of prohibition, and therefore, unlike in the nida case, a person will be able to, let's say, control himself and wait because he knows there is a permitted time period that will arrive. In this case, he's not guaranteed there will be a permitted time period, so he might not be able to control, to withhold himself from having relations with her. V'yomer, and the pasuk says, mayim genuvim yimtaku, literally stolen waters are sweet. And we look at the Rashi on this. Genuvim klomar dovar ha'osir lo, that which is prohibited, yitzra rodef arhov, the evil inclination all the more so pursues it. So here you have a double situation, one that there's no heter in sight, and furthermore, you have a situation of that which is prohibited becomes all the more appealing. There's more commentary on this particular citation. It's found in the Tosfos, quoted at the bottom of the Tosfos column, but for our purposes, we must continue without delving into that detail. So in this bracketed section, we see the Tanakhama saying that the Torah might accept the husband going alone with his wife, but for security purposes, so that there's no forbidden intimacy taking place en route, we want to have people accompanying. And the Rabbi Yossi felt that there's no reason to worry about that because of a Kal Vachomer point. The Chachamim, though, refuted the Kal Vachomer logic with this idea of the sota being more problematic, she'ain law heter. If she's found guilty, so she's a woman that will have no permitted time in the future. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, min ha-Torah ish mevi as ishto la-kayin. From the Torah, a man, a husband, is able to bring his wife to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Kohen, alone, without people accompanying them. Shenemar behavi ha'ish es ishto. The husband brings his wife. Now, so what do we see? As we mentioned before, here you see Rabbi Yehuda saying that the husband being trusted to be alone with his wife is based on the Torah, not based on the Kal Vachomer that Rabbi Yehuda had expressed earlier. The Gemara answers, Omar lehu Kal Vachomer Bereisha. Rabbi Yehuda told the Chachomim of his Kal Vachomer at the outset. That was the first approach that he took in trying to explain his point of view that husband can be alone with the wife. Uparchua. But they then refuted the Kal Vachomer, and their refutation, according to Rashi, is like the refutation that they mentioned to Rabbi Yossi in the bracketed section of the source. Namely, that you can't use the Kal Vachomer from the Nida, because in the case of the Nida, she has Heter afterwards, and with regard to the Sota, there isn't necessarily Heter, there isn't necessary permission that to be with her that will arrive in the future. So that undid Rabbi Yehuda's Kal Vachomer. V'hadar Omar lehu kra, and then he told them that my teaching about trusting the man alone with his wife is based on a pasuk. Now the Gemara asks, and here we're going to use the arrows that we see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You notice there are three arrows. You have one immediately to the left-hand side where we are now, and two more. What they are pointing out is the fact that the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda cited the same pasuk, Vehevi Hoish Es Ishto, which they said, according to the Torah, a man is able to be alone with his wife. So the Gemara asks Rabbi Yehuda, Hainu Tanakhama. Is it not so then that Rabbi Yehuda is saying the same thing as the Tanakhama? The Gemara says, Iko Binayu Avol Omru. And here we have little stars to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. The difference between them is the rabbinic concern of leaving them alone, where the Tanakhama was of the opinion that it's true that Torah says a man can go along with his wife, but we want to have the two Talmidei Chachamim serving as chaperones. And Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold from that. So there is a difference between these two opinions, and that's why they both appear in the same source. They argue with one another on that point. Before we go further into the new Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Me'aymin al ha-soita l'chodois l'fnei she'moichikim es ha-shem. Me'aymin, as we literally has to do with the instilling fear upon her. Let us say we try to motivate the sota to confess her guilt, of course, assuming she had intimacy when in seclusion with that with the paramour. We try to get her to confess that she yielded to her evil inclination before we erase the parsha containing God's name over the water that she would eventually have to drink. So that We mentioned, by the way, and we should mention it really at the beginning of every new Masechta that one learns, that one should study the Mishnayos of the entire Masechta beforehand, so that references can be made easily to main points that relate to the topic under study. So if you are, if you did that, so that you know that the Sota woman is brought to the Beis Hamikdash, whereby the Parsha of Sota from the book of Numbers, Sefer Bamidbar, in Parshas Noso, there's a section of the Torah that describes the Sota situation. So that is written on a parchment in the Beis HaMikdash, and then after it's written, the contents of the parsha are erased. Now, when you're erasing ink from on the parchment, in effect, you're scratching it off, and it falls into the dried ink that you're scratching off, and falls into the water, and that's the water that she is made to drink. Now, but in doing so, you're in effect that you wrote down the parsha with God's name in it, and then you're erasing it. It's true we're erasing God's name, which essentially is something strictly forbidden. But the Almighty, in His great humility, says better for my name to be erased, to preserve a family unit, than to have them remain prohibited to one another. The hope, of course, being that she'll drink the water, nothing happens to her, revealing her innocence, and they can go back living together. So the erasure of God's name is going to take place. Now, if she's guilty, wouldn't it be better for her to confess her guilt than go through the whole process of erasing the name of the Almighty, only then for it to drink the water and die from that? We could spare the whole process by her confessing. By the way, if she in fact confesses, yes, I was guilty of intimacy with another man, she would not be subject to a death penalty, because there weren't two witnesses that warned her beforehand that had seen the actual act of intimacy. So that it would, let's say, pay for her to confess beforehand if she in fact is guilty, because by drinking the water, so a guilty woman will end up dying from that. By confessing ahead of time, as we said before, nothing will happen to her as far as, let's say, death penalty at the hands of the court. So now the Mishnah. This Mishnah, you'll notice, continues till the upper part of Omid Beis. Hayu Malin Oisola Beis in Agodol Shibushalayim. They would bring her to the high court, the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. Umaymin Olao, and they would pressure her to confess. Keder Shemaymin Al Eide Nefoshos. In the same way that pressure is placed on witnesses in all capital cases to confess if they are not telling the truth. This concept of ma'aymin you find referred to in Maseches Sanhedrin, which deals with the issue of witnesses that come to testify about capital cases. So just like you find this idea of ma'aymin on Eidei Nefoshos, on witnesses, and Nefoshos are capital cases, so too we apply that over here to this woman. V'oimer, or V'oimrim law. And we tell her, V.T., our daughter, Harbe Yayin Oise, Harbe Shoik Oise. The effects, we understand, so to speak, how a person could slip up. Wine has its effects. Schok, levity, lightheadedness has its effects. Harbe, yaldus oisa, youthfulness is also characterized by foolishness. That also affects people. Harbe, shcheinim, haroyim oisim. There are lots of effects by undesirable neighbors, bad environment has an effect on a person. All of these might very well have affected you. Al ta'asi Lishmo HaGadol Shenichtav B'Kedusha, don't allow the name, the great name of the Almighty that was written in holiness, Shimoche Al Hamayim, that should end up being erased over the water. Therefore, confess ahead of time, thereby stopping the process and sparing the erasure of God's name. V'yoyimir lefunel dvorem she'eno kedai l'shomon. And things are said to her that otherwise wouldn't be necessary or worth her hearing. He, v'chol mishpachas beis avoshi, and the rest of her family. Now, what are those things that are said to them? That will be revealed later in the Gemara. If she confesses, says, yes, I am guilty, I had intimacy with that fellow. Now, if you translate things in a very literal fashion, you're going to come out with a very, quite an erroneous conclusion. The word shoveres does not mean breaking. Shoveres comes from the word shovar. Shovar is a receipt. What role does a receipt have in this context? So Rashi explains, across from here, a couple lines up, Sheveres Ksubasa, Rashi says, Koseves Shovar Al Ksubasa. She writes a receipt that makes reference to the Ksuba. Ksuba is the financial guarantee that regular women receive from their husbands in the event of their either being divorced or his dying, they get paid the Ksuba money. In this case, she writes a receipt concerning the ksuba. This woman does not deserve a ksuba. I hope that is clear. She would write the following: Zonisi vifsadidi ksubasi. I behaved illicitly. I had intimacy with another man, and I thereby lose my ksuba. I understand that I have no ksuba collection rights. Venoisenes biad baila shalotid beenu lacharzman, and then this shovar, this receipt with the text Zonisi Vifsadidi Ksubasi, is given to her husband, thereby preventing her from trying to collect the Ksuba L'Acharzman sometime later. So he has this security document, the receipt. The Eino Neheregas, she's not subject to a death penalty. Shalom Hisrubo Aiden Bishas Maisa, there was no warning she received from witnesses at the time of the intimacy. All we know is that she went into seclusion with another man, but as far as the actual act of intimacy, there were no witnesses, and therefore there's no room for the court to act. So this term, back in the Mishnah, the word shoveres comes from the word shovar, the receipt, ksubasa, concerning the suba. And she then leaves. If she says, I am innocent, I am pure, she's then brought to the eastern gate, which is known as the Nicanor Gate. Nicanor was the name of a person concerning whom there were miracles that resulted in the doors, the gates of the Beis Hamikdash, in their trip, in the transportation from their origin in Alexandria of Egypt. As the Gemara in Yuma tells us, he was responsible for their coming to Jerusalem through a miraculous circumstance, and therefore the gates are called by his name, Nicanor. You can see this information in the Rashi. So they bring her to the eastern gate. This Shar Nicanor was an eastern gate of the temple courtyard of the Azora. When we speak about a gate, it's an entranceway that would lead into the Azora. The entranceway itself was rather thick. It had depth to it, measured several amos. And the Shisham, and at that location, Mashkinas Asoitos, Umitarinas Ayoldos, Umitarinas Amitsuroyan. The Sota would be given to drink over there. Another two ceremonies took place there. The Yoldos are women that gave birth. They, after their, their Tumah period following birth, they bring sacrifices. Being that they're the owners of the sacrifices, they have to stand near where the sacrifice is offered, but they can't go into the temple courtyard proper, so therefore they stand over there. And the Mitzora is
one who finished his Tzoras Tumo period, he stands in the gateway while his thumbs receive a blood and oil application as is part of the purification process of the Metzora. No need for us to get into any further details on that matter. That's what's significant for the, regarding the Shaar Nicanor. The Gemara continues with the descriptions of what we do with the Sota. And we should give a little title to this section, and that is that the object, our goal at this point is to denigrate the woman, to cause disparagement, embarrassment, if you will, regarding this woman. And how is that done? Well, the kohen oiches bivgodeha, the kohen that's in charge of the service, he grabs upon her clothing. Im nikru, if while he grabs her clothing, it tears, so be it. The im nifrumu, if it frays even more than a simple tear, but gets even more torn up. So nifrumu, so be it. Achu megales libo, he is basically exposing the area, and they will say her upper chest area. The libo loses her heart until he reveals her heart. What means he's pulling on the clothing where a regular woman dresses in modesty, so her clothing are closed properly up till approximately up to her neck. And in this case, one should, by the way, read between the lines here and understand there's a standard of modesty, and then there is the opposite thereof, and we're going to be our goal is to undo the standard modesty of the woman. So and that is designed to be disparaging. Just an editorial comment that is that one can find themselves in a society where what Torah views as being disparaging is actually praiseworthy, and hence you find women folk dressed revealing a little bit too much of their anatomy that, from the Torah standpoint, should not be revealed. Nevertheless, in the case of the Sota, where we're trying to disparage her, that revelation is in fact the basis of the disparagement, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. And that's what the Mishnah describes, and so that the clothing are tugged upon until the upper part of her chest is revealed. The Soiser is Syrah, and her hair is undone. Rashi says, the Soiser Syrah Miklioso, from its a woman, certainly a married woman, is part of her modesty is that her hair is not free flowing. It's miklioso, I mean it's braided. Elsewhere, we find the idea of a basic married woman goes with her hair covered so that. The pasuk says upora rosho isha. Pora means to reveal. That means her hair covering is taken off. Under her hair covering, her hair would have been braided. And here we're saying that in addition to the exposing of her hair, which here the Mishnah doesn't make explicit reference to that, but in addition to that, the braid is undone. Rabbi Yehuda Omer im hoya libo noa lo hoya megaleh im hoya saira noa lo hoya soiser. Rabbi Yehuda is concerned with those that are present while this ceremony is taking place. Maybe their passion will be aroused, and therefore if she is an attractive woman, if her chest is nice, if her hair is nice, is attractive, then this should not be done. The Chachamim don't agree with him on that. Let's continue in the source. If she was wearing white clothing, she is dressed in black clothing. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis, v'katlios nizomim metabos. These are references to different kinds of jewelry, golden jewelry, katlios. Rashi describes what that is
on the top, and different kinds of nose rings or finger rings. All of these jewelry would be mavirin mimena, would be taken off kedei lenavla, so as to make her, to disparage her, to denigrate her. Lenavla means literally to make her disgusting or ugly. V'achar kach mevi chevel mitzri, and afterwards a mitzri rope. Chevel mitzri is, Rashi explains, it's made from palm fibers. It's a rope made from tzorei dekel. This rope is brought along the kosher lamala midodeha, and it's tied above her breasts. In other words, the clothing that she was wearing. And we said that it was possibly ripped open, and we don't want the clothing to actually fall off and reveal her total nakedness. So this chevel mitzri is brought, the kushul amalami that was tied around her above her breasts, as we just explained based on the Rashi. V'chol haroitze liros ba liros, and anyone who wants to come and watch this scene is invited to come and watch. The idea behind this is that to see a woman subjected to such disparagement will serve as a warning to people how important one to motivate people concerning the importance of a moral lifestyle, and not to be loose and free, which would lead to these, to this kind of situation. We said everyone is invited, chutz me avodeh v'shifoseha, with the exception of her slaves and her bondmaids, mipnei sheliba gas bohen. She feels a sense of security when they are there. Rashi says on the fourth line from the top, shelibo gaspo kshodom roi b'nei beso, when a person sees members of his household there, daito misgaberes olav, it creates a certain sense of self-assuredness. V'lo tira, v'lo tivadeh, she won't have fear, and she won't confess. V'anu mevakshim shetivadeh, v'lo yimoch Hashem HaKadosh al hamoim. And our goal, our concern is she should confess so as to stop the process and prevent the name of God being erased over the water. So we don't want to have people there like her avodim reshvachos that would create this self-assuredness on her part, or internal psychological security that would prevent her from confessing. V'chol hanoshim mutoros l'rosa, all women are allowed to see her. Now this expression mutoros l'rosa seems to be inconsistent with what we saw before in the Mishnah, which said anyone who wants to see her can come, even men. Here it seems to be an invitation to women only. A point that, again, will have to be touched upon later. So the Mishnah says all women are allowed to see her. Shenemar v'nivasru kol hanoshim v'lo sa'aseno kezi maskeno. And all women will be put on notice and will not behave in a wayward fashion as she did. The Gemara, Meno Hani Mili. From where do we know that we need to go specifically to the high court in the Beis Hamikdash? Granted that she has to go to Yerushalayim, the Pasuk says, Vehemid, Rashi quotes this pasuk, Vehemid HaKoynes Yishu Lefnei Hashem, that the woman is brought Lefnei Hashem, and Lefnei Hashem indicates she's brought to the Temple Mount. But you see, on the Temple Mount there were other courts, there were courts of 23 judges as well. Why is it that she is expected to be brought to the Sanhedrin itself, the highest court of 71 judges? So from where do we know that? Omar Rabbi Chiya Bar Gamdo, Omar Rav Yossi Bar Chanina, Asya Torah, Torah. There's a word comparison. The word Torah appears in two contexts. In this case of the Sota, it says that the Kohen will do all of the Torah. Regarding the
rebellious judge, we call the Zokein Mamre, it says, Al pi ha-Torah asher yarucha. That pasuk appears in that context. Al pi ha-Torah asher yarucha, ma la'alon b'shivim v'echad. Just like over there, with regard to the Zokein Mamre, his rebelliousness is established as such only when it is against the highest court, not just his colleagues from the town he comes from, but he rules against the highest court, and that is based on psukim that Rashi quotes. So just like there by the Zokin Mamre where the word Torah appears, it's in the presence of 71. Afkan Soto with regard to the Soto where the word Torah also appears, Beshivim Vechad. It's in the presence, in the place of the court of 71, which is in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, as we saw in the Mishnah. She is brought to the entrance to the Shaar Nikanor, and it's not sufficient that she simply arrives in Jerusalem at the Temple Mount, but she has to rise up till the Temple courtyard, where the Beis Din of Shiva Vechot of 71 are located. Umeaimin Aleha Vehule, and we pressured her to confess, and the goal being to stop the name of Hashem from being erased. And now we continue with a Tanaic source that would seem to say something to the contrary. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Kushya, we're going to present a question. Katoni ma'aymin al hasota lishtos. We're going to see a Tanaic source, and if your eye caught the dashed underlining, then even all the better. You see it says in this Tanaic source, we pressure her to drink. We pressure to go ahead with the process. Well, but Mishnah saying Reinu, but in our Mishnah, our note on the side continues, in our Mishnah we've seen Dima'imin Aleha Kadei Shalotishta. We try to pressure her not to go ahead with the drinking. So now the Gemara. Vira Minhu. We raise a contradiction. Kederech Shmaimin Aleha Shalotishta, Kach Ma'imin Aleha Shetishta. As at one point we pressured her not to go ahead with the drinking, we pressure her to go ahead with the drinking. With the drinking, which of course involves the prior erasure of God's name over the water that she is to drink. Omrim lo bt, we say to her, our daughter, in boru lo hadover shetorat, if it's clear to you that you are innocent. It's kind of like obvious that if she's going ahead with the drinking, she feels she's innocent. So if it's clear to you that you're innocent, imdi aburyech, stand on your clarity, on your certainty, ushti, and drink the water. L'fisha'en amayim hamorim, domim elu l'sam yoveh shemunuch al boser chai. The bitter waters, namely the water that she is to drink, why it's called bitter, we'll wait for later in the Masechta to see that. But the sota waters are no different than a dry, like a powdery medicine that's placed on open flesh. Im yesho maka, if you take this medicine, some type of powdery medicine, dry medicine, and put it on flesh, and there happens to be a wound there, well, mechalchel v'yoreid, it will penetrate and do whatever it does. My understanding of it is that if there's a wound, you'll feel the medicine there. Sometimes it'll actually burn when you place it on the flesh that has an open wound there. However, ain shalmake, if there's no bruise there, there's no wound, ain't no mo'aklum, it has no effect. So too the waters, if you're guilty, so it'll have its negative effect. If you're not guilty, nothing will happen. And if you're maintaining your innocence, so by all means drink it, though you have nothing to worry about. Anyway, what do we see? We see this source pressuring her to drink. Lo kashya. There is no contradiction. Kan kodim shenimcha megila, kan la'achar shenimcha megila. If Megillah is a reference to the parchment on which the Parsha Sota, with God's name, had been written, if it has not yet been erased, so then we'll try our best to convince her to confess so as to not drink the water. not, in other words, we're trying to motivate her to stop the process so as to prevent the parsha from being erased. However, once it's erased, that's a different story. Then we say what we just saw here, motivational words to get her to drink. We take a look in the Rashi. You see across from me, you might notice some diamonds in the Rashi, where we highlighted the words Kodem and La'achar. So Rashi says, Kodem Shenimcha Megillah, before the Megillah has been erased, we motivate her to confess, Kedei Shelo Yimoche Hashem, so as to prevent the name of God being erased. Ma'aymin Shelo Lishos, we pressure her not to drink. And of course, that will be accomplished if she will come forth with her statement of guilt. U'la'achar Shenimcha, after she didn't confess her guilt, and they went ahead and erased the parsha over the water, Omrim lo divrei tanchumin lishtos, we then say words of consolation, trying to motivate her to drink. Im nekiyahi, if she in fact is innocent, kidei lahatir labayla, so as to thereby enable her to go back to her husband, shalotiro min amayim v'tomar tameani v'hi tahora v'totsi laz al atzmo v'aboneha. We get her to drink, and that she shouldn't be so fear-struck of the water now and say that she's guilty when in fact she might very well be innocent, and by saying guilty about herself, she's motzi las, that means she's casting aspersions on herself and on her children. That is all true after it's already been erased, and we want her to drink and not be overcome with fear, and as a result of the fear, she'll just say, I'm guilty, and stop everything right there. Now we go back to the Gemara. The Oimer Lefoneha, the Mishnah said, in our attempts to motivate her to confess her guilt, and as we've just established, if the Megillah, the Parsha, has not yet been erased, and she is, it's not yet been erased, we want to stop the erasure, we'll be able to stop the erasure if she comes forward and says, I am guilty. So if she in fact, if she is guilty, it's worth her while to confess. Tonu Rabbanan. Oymer lefana dvorim shel hagoda, umaisim shiruba ksuvim rishonim. We tell her things that are found, things as stories that and incidents that you find in the early writings in the scriptures. Kagon, asher chachomim yagidu v'lo kichadu me'avoisam. Let's take a look at Rashi across from here. B'ksuvim harishonim, b'dvorim haksuvim b'torah, shenasu b'yomim harishonim. Things that are written in the Torah that were told, happened in the early days, kagon hagodazu, like the following agadic passage. Da'asher chachomim yagidu, here we're quoting from a pasuk in Eov, it's not a pasuk in the Torah, meaning in the five books of Moses, but it says in the book of Eov, da'asher chachomim yagidu, that the wise ones said, v'yodu al chetam. What does it mean, the wise ones said? They confessed their sins, v'lo kichadu avoinam me'avoisam, or the pasuk says me'avoisam, and they didn't kichadu it to deny or withhold their sins, umi heim, and who are they? So Rashi continues, based on what we're going to see in the source, Reuven b'maisa bilha kidilakamon. One story involves Reuven and the incident involving, we'll say, the sleeping or intimacy schedule of Yaakov, his father, after Leah's, Rachel's demise. So Reuven, let's say, rescheduled his father's, let's say, sleeping schedule.
as will be referred to later, and a second incident, Yehuda b'maisa Tamar, and Yehuda, who had intimacy with a woman who turned out to be his daughter-in-law, Tamar, and he says in that passage, Sodka Mimeni, she is more righteous, she is correct, she is more righteous than I am, and I am wrong. We haven't elaborated on these stories, but let's go back into the Gemara text. So the Chumash has stories where our forebearers, specifically Yehuda and Reuven, though they sinned, when it came time to confess the sin, they came forth and confessed and acknowledged their having sinned, and this is what we tell the Sota woman. We continue in the Gemara. Yehuda hoida v'lobosh. Yehuda confessed, and he wasn't embarrassed to do so. Maha yosofa, and what was the end? What was his reward, if you will? What was his end? Nochal chaya olam haba. He inherited a portion in the world to come. Reuven hoida v'lobosh. Reuven confessed his wrongful involvement with his father's sleeping schedule. It wasn't for him to get involved with, and he did. The Lobosh, and he wasn't embarrassed to confess his sinfulness. Maho Yosofo, what was his end? Nochal Chaye Ho'ilom Haba. They inherited a portion in the world to come. Umas Horon, and what's their reward? Now we skip the bracketed section. What the real question is, what maschon ba'olam hazeh? What is their reward in this world? Now, well, let's go over the bracketed section. After having said they inherit a portion of the world to come, so the source says, maschon. The Gemara interrupts and asks, maschon? You're asking, what's their reward? Kideko amrinon. You just said what it was. They inherit a portion of the world to come. Ela maschon ba'olam hazeh. What was their reward in this world? So the answer is Lohem Levadom Nitno Haaretz Velo Ovar Zor Vesocham. As you'll notice, this is a continuation of the Psukim in Sefer Iyov, which spoke about the early ones confessing their sins and their reward. That was by way in Posuk Yudches, and in Posuk Yutes in Iyov, in Perek Tesvav, Posuk Yutes of Iyov, it goes on to say, Lohem Levadim Nidnoretz Velova Zar Besocham. That is a reference to their rewards. So Rashi explains the Lohem Levadim Nitno Haaretz. Yehuda Zocha the Malchus. Yehuda merited having the kingship, the monarch, the Jewish monarchy coming forth from him. B'tosefta the brachas, and Reuven nota chelik tchila baretz be'vayarden, and in the distribution of the portions of the land of Israel, the first one to receive a portion was the tribe of Reuven. So these ideas of monarchy and receipt of land, these are significant events in this world. We continue in the Gemara, which analyzes that which we have just said regarding Yehuda confessing and Reuven confessing. So Bishlam of Yehuda Ashkelon de'odi, we find in the scriptures that Yehuda confessed, d'chtiv, in the story involving his daughter-in-law Tamar and the intimacy that she had. It was told to Yehuda that she, though she was a Yevama, she was waiting for the marriage to Yehuda's third son, Shelah, and she in the meantime had intimacy with some other man, Yehuda was told, and therefore Yehuda said she should be taken, he ruled that she is guilty of a capital offense and should be taken out to be burnt. So it was revealed, though, or it became known to Yehuda that guy was none other than himself. He is the one that had intimacy with her. And it's on those grounds that he's saying that she should be taken out to be burnt. So he confessed that he is the sinner, so to speak, thereby sparing her from the misfortune of being burnt. So
it says in that context, Vayakir Yehuda Vayomer Tzodko Mimeni. Yehuda recognized this. He recognized the different signs that were given. Without getting into the details, you can look certainly into that section of the Torah for the entire storyline. But he recognized the facts, and he proclaimed Tzodko Mimeni. She is more pious. She is justified or more correct than I am. Hence his confession to his having been sinful. Ela Reuven Minolon Diodi. Where do we find Reuven acknowledging his sin? In the Gemara, we see a long question marking. In other words, in the course of all of these lines, even though the Gemara gets off on most of this is really a side topic, you'll notice we've dashed underline the main point of this section of the Gemara. Notice, it says, Mi goram l'Ruvain shahida. Who caused Ruvain to confess? What we see here, though, is that Ruvain did confess his sin. And that is why this section of the Gemara is being quoted. We asked, do we have any evidence of Ruvain confessing? The answer is yes. It's not an explicit scriptural reference, but there is a reference nonetheless to Reuven having confessed. Who caused Reuven to confess? It was Reuven actually seeing that Yehuda confessed his sin that motivated Reuven to confess his sin. And that's basically what we are looking for. Now the Gemara. The question was, Ruvein Menolan Dodi, the Omer of Yishmu Bar Nachmeni Omer of Yoinusan. My Dichtiv, what is behind the Pasuk says, Yechi Ruvein Va'al Yomois, and then immediately following that Pasuk, which is Pasuk Vav in Perek Lamed Gimel of Dvorim, Pasuk Zayin says, V'zois Liuda. So you see this juxtaposition between Ruvein, says, and Ruvein shall live and not die, and thusly to Yehuda. What's the point of this juxtaposition? Kol oisin shon of Yisrael b'midbar, all the years that the Jewish people were in the desert after their exodus from Egypt, hayu atzmois of Yehuda megugolin ba'oron, the bones, the skeleton of Yehuda, which accompanied the coffins, if you will, of the other tribes, we have 12 tribes that basically died in Mitzrayim. Their coffins were carried out to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Within the coffin containing Yehuda's remains, his bones were no longer in an attached, recognizable skeletal fashion, but rather they were all jumbled up. In contrast to the rest of the other brothers' remains were intact. There was certainly in skeletal form, complete recognizable skeletons. Not so with regard to Yehuda. Ad she'omad Moshe ubeke shel Avraham, until Moshe Rabbeinu arose and he prayed. In other words, this phenomenon of the jumbled up bones was indicative of something problematic. And Moshe Rabbeinu arose and prayed for his welfare. Omar Lefonov, Moshe says, Ribbono shel Olam, Almighty God, Mi goram Reuven shehoda, who caused Reuven to confess his sin, to come forward and confess his sin? Yehuda. It was because of Yehuda's actions that Reuven confessed his sin. And basically, as we said before, this line is why this section of Gemara was brought in. Well, you see, merit that belongs to Yehuda, and therefore Vazos Yehuda should. And here what we're doing is we're darshaning the psukim that we mentioned above, where Moshe Rabbeinu says, and this is the lot that should befall Yehuda, so that Moshe Rabbeinu is praying on behalf of Yehuda. After all, he is the one that caused Reuven to confess his sin. Moshe Rabbeinu continues, and in the next lines of the Gemara, we're going to be weaving in the psukim that we started citing, and continue with the psukim.
So Moshe Rabbeinu continues, and he says, Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda. Hearken unto the voice of Yehuda, Almighty God. And what happened? Erl Evorei L'Shofa. Erl means entered. Evorei, the limbs, the bones. L'Shofa, into their respective sockets. In other words, the skeleton of... The bones join together to form a proper skeleton. Even though that was achieved, nevertheless, Yehuda remained outside the Mesifta Derekiah. Mesifta Derekiah is the heavenly yeshiva. Moshe Rabbeinu continues, says, Ve'alamo Tivienu, bring him unto his nation. Well, that resulted in his being allowed to enter the heavenly yeshiva. You might ask, why was he left outside the heavenly yeshiva? So Rashi points out that as a result of that which Yehuda in his life, in his own lifetime, said in his guarantee of taking, or in his accepting responsibility over Binyamin in the story involving the bringing of Binyamin in front of Yosef, Yehuda basically said that he's offering his share in the world to come if anything should befall Binyamin. And there's a concept that the curse or a nidui, excommunication of a sage, even if it's for naught, because after all, nothing really did happen to Binyamin at the end of the day. Nevertheless, he said it. It comes to reality, to fruition. Of course, a clear warning that a person should be careful before he utters any curses, especially if he's a chacham. So it says, Moshe Rabbeinu noticed that he was left outside the yeshiva, he prayed to God, "Let him in." El amo tivienu. Fine. So he's let in. However, he was sitting there, but unable to conduct a Torah give and take, a Torah conversation. In other words, he was unable to conduct himself in Torah discussions. He was not understanding what they were saying. He couldn't participate in the discussions in that heavenly yeshiva. Yodav Rablo. So Moshe Rabbeinu continued in his prayer with these words, give him strength to understand their discussions. So fine, that was granted, and there was Yehuda in the heavenly yeshiva conducting himself in Torah discussions. However, lo have a kosalka leishmaitz alivadichosa. Points that he was saying never ended up as being the final ruling, the accepted halacha. So that's... a general word here is that it's of course wonderful to be involved in halachic discussions, halachic conversations, offering ideas. But the higher form, the highest form, is to say things that are accurate and that are accepted to be practiced halacha. So he wasn't achieving that. So Moshe Rabbeinu went on to say, "V'ezer mitzorav tiyeh." And with that, then Yehuda not only understood the discussions, participated in discussions, but also said things that were aliba dehilchosa, that were accurate. As Rashi says, aliba dehilchosa, when he was unable to lohoya zoche lomar dovar miskabli, he wasn't able to say things that were accepted. But in the final analysis, he reached even that level as a result of Moshe Rabbeinu's intervention. Bishlomo Yehuda Da'odi, we understand what motivated Yehuda to confess his sin. Why did he confess? Ki hechi delo tisarev Tamar, so that Tamar, the daughter-in-law, should not end up being burnt. That would have been, let's say, her punishment for having been with some other man. Ela Reuven loma le Da'odi. Why did Reuven come forth and let his sin be known? In fact, it's not something that we are proud of, or we encourage publicizing one's offenses. Omar of Sheshes, Chotzef Olai Demafrit Chatei. It's considered
bold and chutzpedik for one who mafrit chatei means publicizes his sins. And yet, it seems that Reuven publicized his sin. What was the point in doing that? Answer, ki hechi delo lech shedu achoi, so that his other brothers should not fall under the suspicion of having rearranged their father's sleeping intimacy schedule. So he had a reason, even though in general we don't publicize sinfulness, but if there's a specific purpose in doing so, so it is done. On the side of the more under the nose, the topic heading, we have written, Im nitan ledayek mishosenu, is there room to infer from that which it said in our Mishnah, shoyveres ksubasa de kaisvin shofar, that in general, when debts are paid up or debts are relieved, do we insist on the writing of a shofar, of a receipt? Now, you might say, well, it's a great thing to have a receipt. That's an indication that, let's say, you borrowed money and you paid up your debt. So you get a receipt so that the malva, the person who loaned you the money, won't come to you for a second collection if you paid it up already. There's another approach, though. And that is, if you are paying up a debt, the original bill of collection would be torn up without then any need for a receipt. If the bill of collection is torn up, the malva, the one who loaned you money, isn't going to have an instrument through which to collect from you. And yet, in this Gemara, it seems that there's room to say, no, we don't insist on tearing up documents. Rather, and by the way, in our context, what document would have been torn up? The ksuba contract, that the document that enables that guarantees a woman financial security upon either divorce or death. So we would have torn up the ksuba. That would have prevented her from collecting from him later on. But yet our Mishnah doesn't indicate anything about tearing up the ksuba. Our Mishnah speaks about a receipt being written. Now, you might ask, what's the big deal? Just write a receipt. The answer to that is it's not so simple. You see, the love, or the one who had the debt upon him, if he's expected to receive a receipt, that means he's going to have to watch the receipt that it doesn't get lost, that mice don't come and eat it up. So it's a type of burden placed upon him. It would be much more convenient for a person that paid up his debts not to receive the receipt, but rather to have the original bill of collection that would threaten him to have it torn up. That would protect him from any future second collections. So our Mishnah doesn't say that we tear up the ksuba. Our Mishnah says shoveres, that she writes a receipt to the husband. So the Gemara asks, Shamas mino kaisvin shover, should we conclude from here that the process in solving the debt, double collections of debt, is through the writing of a receipt? Namely, and not the tearing up of the original debt of a bill of collection. Omar Abaye, Tani Mikara'as. Abaye says, you know, instead of the Mishnah saying Shoveres Ksuba, the text should be Mikara'as. The Ksuba is torn up, thereby protecting the husband from any future threat of needing to pay. Oh, Malay Rava. Rava argues on Abai, says, if Shoveres Katani, you can't change the language of the Mishnah. It's not a type of word that you would say make a mistake about. It says Shoveres. Shoveres is from the Lashon, from the expression Shover, a receipt. Elo Omar Rava. B'mokom she'ein kaisvin ksuba askinan. This idea is featured quite extensively in Maseches Ksubas. We're talking about the Mishnah represents a place where they didn't have the practice of writing an actual Ksuba document. So there was nothing to tear up. And if it wasn't the practice of writing an actual ksuba document, and women were able, they would collect a ksuba. Let's say she was a widow. She would bring witnesses that the husband died. And you'll ask, well, could she not bring witnesses in a second court and again collect her ksuba? So to that we say, look, if we have no other choice in a case like that, then a shovar is written. But in a place that a ksuba was written, we would tear it up and not expect the husband to constantly be on guard or in protection of a shovar. The imam ra tahirani malin oisal share mizrach. And if she says, I am innocent, so then we bring her up to the eastern gate. The Gemara asks, this language of we then bring her up, it's not accurate. Malin oisal, we then bring her up. The Gemara continues at the top of Daf Ches. Hossam Kaima, she was already there. The Rashi points out at the top, Hossam Kaima, Belishka Sagosa, she was already near the office in which the Sanhedrin was located. It's called Belishka Sagosis. Kideko Amris, as was said, Sheaimu Olel Basin Agodol, that the high court would pressure her. The Lishkas Gozis Bazora, the Lishkas Gozis was located in the temple courtyard. And as it is spelled out in Maseches Yuma, we don't need to get into the details of that right now. But the point is, the language of the Mishnah of she would then be brought up to the eastern gate. How can you say she would then be brought up there when she was already there? The Gemara says, yes, it's true, she was already there. However, what we do with this woman is the maskinon lo umachtinon lo kedei liyago. We have her brought up. The Temple Mount was an incline, so she would go up to the eastern gate and then be brought down, up and down, in order to wear her out, in order to tire her out. And Rashi explains, umachtina lo, that means to lower her down, to bring her down, mikol harabayas, from the entire Temple Mount, lachar she'aymu aleo, after she was pressured to confess. So there was the pressure on her to confess, and then she started this walking down and back up to wear her out. Kedei liago, Rashi continues, v'tidag min amayim, and to create concern and worry on her part from the water, v'todah, and confess, kishetira b'tzoros, and see what she's being subjected to, seeing her tzoros. This idea of trying to wear out in order to confess, we see this in another source, the Sanya of Shimon Elazar Oimer. This is from Maseches Sanhedrin, dealing, of course, with the topic we mentioned earlier, the witnesses that also were coming to testify concerning a capital case. On their word, someone's going to die, so we want to make sure that those guys are telling the truth, and if they're there to lie, they better confess thusly. So it says in that context of Shimon Elazar Oimer, based in Masi'in Esoed Mimokom Lemokom, the court would cause the witnesses to walk from place to place, so that they become their minds are Titrav Daitan, their minds become befuddled, all confounded, and realize the trouble that they are causing, and if they're lying in their testimony, they will back out. They will, Yasuma, they will backtrack and withdraw their testimony. So this idea of movement has its not only the physical effects on a person being led from one place to another, has the result in their confessing that which needs to be confessed, each situation in its own context. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked
Gemaras. We can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.